Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I am your hostess for this evening. As always, we're brought to you through the good offices and kind thoughts of the folks at www.patriotfamilies.com. A great group of patriots who believe very strongly that all of us are the nation. I'm pretty sure that most of you listening out there, and my friends in the chat room, and good evening, Miss Linda, and good evening, Miss Yola, by the way, have heard about the cheating scandal in the Atlanta, Georgia public school system. I was talking with my eldest stepdaughter over last week when she came up for her father's funeral. And she and her husband both expressed their bitter anger at what those teachers and staff and the superintendent did to the children in their care by giving them false grades in order to receive funds and earn bonuses and make themselves look good. My stepdaughter is a school psychologist. And she deals with the children who can't manage to fit in. And she sees parents who are bewildered and baffled at why their child is failing when they passed all their standardized tests. And don't understand that they are victims of progressive educational policies that want equal outcomes instead of equal opportunity. When I heard about the scandal and saw the depth and breadth of it in the Atlanta public school system, it reminded me of something I learned from my husband. Many, many years ago, when he was a young man, his dad, who was in the military, was an intelligence officer and dealt with many of the Russian defectors in the 1950s and early 60s who came to this country to escape from Soviet Russia. And he learned from them that in those days and in Soviet schools, cheating was considered to be a praiseworthy life skill and was rewarded because it was the only way to use the system to get what you wanted. Merit meant nothing. Effort meant less than nothing. What mattered was to have the grade or the perceived relationship or the piece of paper that certified you were a credit to the Communist Party and a valuable asset to the state. This is what you get, ladies and gentlemen, when you have Marxist-Communist theory operating in your educational system, where the group and integration in the group is more important than individuality, and the sanctity of the state far outreaches the benevolence, kindness, and sanctity of God. Because God can't give you a good test score. But of course, if you cheat properly, the state can. And that gives you the stepping stone to power and influence and what wealth is available. What stresses me and what distresses me most and angers me about the situation in Atlanta is the damage it has done to the integrity of education. It has created in people's minds the assumption that education is a cheat and a lie and a theft, that our children are not expected to actually gather knowledge, retain it, and apply it, but merely to succeed on a written test that shows, when they wave it under someone's nose, that they are valuable to the state. Greed, I understand. I know that many of the teachers involved and many of the staff members involved wanted to raise the overall test scores because it was tied into their salaries. If the school's accreditation was renewed or if their accredited grade point average on the standards of learning was raised, bonuses were given out all down the line. And everybody has to make a living. We all would like to have a little more money to spend. I understand that motivation because sometimes we need a little bit more money to spend. If we're struggling in a bad economy, if we have a child who's ill or who has a condition that requires something extra rather than the heavy cost of raising an ordinary, healthy child, I can understand the desire to gain the recognition or the praise of one's peers. I share it. I am very pleased and very proud when my colleagues compliment me on the job that I do. It makes me feel good to have my work recognized and applauded. But the difference, I think, is that my work doesn't require the quote-unquote data-driven, progressive, numerical, mechanical approach. My work shows in the behaviors of the children I work with. It shows in the ability they have to remember what I have taught them and their desire to apply it in their classrooms. It shows when they go to their classes and they tell the teacher, well, Mrs. Rowland said thus and so, and the explanation clarifies for everybody what the teacher is presenting that day. And the teacher comes and tells me that I have done something good for her students. I was taught, both at home and in school, that earned reward is sweet. That being recognized for one's effort, one's skill, one's expertise, one's talents, was a good thing and to be striven for. And it wasn't based on a piece of paper. It was based on what you did and how you treated others, as well as what you learned and how well you remembered it, and how quickly and efficiently you were able to complete work that was required of you, how interested you were in what was being taught, and whether or not you thought about it after you left the classroom. The rewards were the good grades on my report card, which I had earned. No one gave it to me because I was cute or little or smart or came from the right family or the wrong one, or they felt sorry for me or they liked me. My grades were based on the effort I put forth and the knowledge I had accumulated. I knew this, and my parents knew this, and they were proud when I brought home straight A's because they knew that their pride was based in something real that I had accomplished. The number of students in the Atlanta public schools and their parents who cannot have that pride saddens and distresses me more than I can possibly express. If we could treat our public schools, as my friend Linda says, as not the province of the federal government and the state government, but as they used to be, funded by the localities, the teachers hired by the localities, and the parents of the children being taught having direct influence on what went on in the classroom, and the community taking part in the education of the community's children. But unfortunately, through many years of progressive educational manipulation, we do not have that. We have parents who blindly trust that government will take care of their kids in school and out, and feel that they can't possibly do it because they're too busy trying to keep a roof over their heads or buy that extra car or get the $300,000 house they've been drooling over in the walled neighborhood down the street. We have teachers, good teachers, who are passionate about their job, being told that if children refuse to do the work, don't study, don't turn in homework, don't show up at school, and fail, it is obviously the teacher's fault, because we, as employees of the state, must partake of that same divine power that the almighty state shows so abundantly. I tell my students that I cannot learn for them. I can and will explain something 27 different ways, if needed, until I hit on the one that makes it clear to them. My patience occasionally wears thin, but I keep trying anyway. Some of my students catch on at the first explanation. Some take the 35th or 42nd. But every single one of them knows that when they are with me, my job is to teach them, not pat them on the back and tell them they're wonderful, not make up for a bad home life, not be a shoulder to cry on because their BFF found another BFF and is dissing them on Facebook, not to listen to their love lives and tell them who likes who and who doesn't like who and the best way to get a boy and or a girl, but to teach them the academic skills that sooner or later in their lives they will need in order to be independent, functioning citizens of this nation. Of course, with our data-driven, progressive educational theory, that aspect of teaching has fallen by the wayside. What matters now is that piece of printout that shows how many answers you got right, what percentile you are, whether or not you have accomplished what you need to do to go to the next level in school, and which is used to grade your school as to its effectiveness in putting knowledge into the heads of children, whether they want it or not. I may have mentioned quite a while ago that last year, my school had to go through the accreditation process that all public schools do every 5 years. There are bodies of accreditors who are licensed by the Department of Education and or approved by the Department of Education to test public schools to make sure that they are maintaining the proper standards to give a homogeneous education throughout the United States. They look at record keeping. They look at data, test scores. They look at how the school refers students to outside agencies who may need additional help or aid of some sort. They look at the organization of the staff, whether or not communication from administration to faculty is clear and concise, and whether or not faculty is communicating clearly with administration. They look at the bullet points and the numbers and the cogs and the gears and all the little nuts and bolts that make up the fabric of the machine we call public schools. I was chosen to be a member of the group who spoke with these nice accrediting people when they did their oral interviews with staff members. My contribution to the conversation was as diplomatic as I could make it and still be truthful. I did not snort, make a face, or grumble when I heard other members of the group talk about how data-driven we were and how computerized we were and how we measured everything from the size of the children's feet to the size of their hair ribbons. That's a slight exaggeration. But I did state that one of the best things about our schools was that the people in them who were teaching children spoke with each other, relied on one another, and worked together for the good of every student in our schools. And that the only thing that I would ask for improvement in was in the communication so that everybody understood the difficulties and the successes and the problems and could address them whenever they arose. We were accredited. Re-accredited, I should say. Now, I was not privy to the accreditation deliberations, obviously, but I was privy to the various categories, all the nice little forms that you had to fill out and all the little individualized temperature taking you had to do, your various report cards. And it all boiled down to the same thing. How do we achieve the impossible? How do we get equal outcomes for all children in all schools, in all states? Well, the answer to that one is impossible because we will never have that. We will never have equal outcomes, ladies and gentlemen. We don't have equal outcomes in any human endeavor. And it is not only unrealistic, it is utterly insane to assume that by the benefit of the divine government and its regulations, somehow we can upend the order of the universe and provide equal outcomes to everybody. But it is that pernicious idea that is at the root of the teaching scandal, the testing scandal in Atlanta. Because every single one of those people, whether they did it because they were told their job was in jeopardy if they didn't, or they did it for a fat bonus, or they did it for recognition of being superintendent of the year, motivation doesn't matter. It is the underlying premise that created the climate where it could happen and did happen at the scale that we saw. And it is, as I mentioned when I first saw an article about it, only the tip of the iceberg. Because I can tell you that I am sure this is going on in every school system in the country to one degree at another or another. It may not be as blatant as erasing children's answers and penciling in the correct ones, or as helping children on standardized tests and guiding them toward the correct multiple choice. It may very well be much more subtle and much more pernicious. I've seen it happen when students are given a copy of the test to study for the test. When they are given notes that are already filled in because they can't write fast enough to do it in class with everybody else, or read well enough to figure out what the sentence around the blank is asking them for. Or when they introduced something other than multiple choice in the state standards of learning, students, especially special education students, given the essay question a week ahead of time to take home and write with mommy and daddy helping. I would never, ever harm a child, willingly or unwillingly. I would not treat a child badly or inhumanely or unkindly. I would never deliberately destroy a child's belief in him or herself, or their enthusiasm for learning. But neither will I lie to children and tell them that they are good at something when they are not. That's just as useful and just as healthy as putting a Band-Aid on someone with colon cancer. We spend a great deal of money, ladies and gentlemen. Your money and my money and China's money and anybody else we can borrow from, and we pour it into our public education system, into the Federal Department of Education, into the tricks of the trade, into the latest equipment and the prettiest buildings and the neatest accessories and teachers' retirement packages and just about every other thing you could name. And what we get from it is people who graduate from high school functionally illiterate, incapable of holding a job because they have been told that they are entitled to just about anything they want without having to put forth any effort, and that if something's too hard, they shouldn't have to do it, because they'll feel badly if they can't. I had to go to the bank the other day to handle some business related to my husband's passing. And I was conversing with the lady who was helping me out. And I was riding my educational hobby horse. Can't help it. It's what I do. It arose fairly naturally, since she asked me what I did for a living when I said I worked. But she was telling me the kinds of, it's absolutely appalling to her, the quality of applicants they get at our own little locally owned bank who can't even add 5 plus 6 and come up with 11 without a calculator. I had another professional in the area when I was working in private industry and a part of the Vocational Education Private Industry Committee for the local schools, who talked about the fact that young ladies would come to a bank to apply for a job in ragged jean skirts and halter tops and assume, while they chewed their gum, that they were going to be first in line for the teller position simply because they were a high school graduate and they were them. It is appalling, ladies and gentlemen, that we have been cheating our children for so many years. We're seeing the results. With all the emphasis that our current president seems to put on everybody needs to go to college, there isn't any real understanding that not everybody should go to college. And not everybody needs to go to college in order to be a functioning citizen who can earn enough to be independent. I can't blame only the Federal Department of Education and the progressives, although they take the lion's share. Part of the reason we are having so many problems in our education system is that we have drifted or shifted with the movement of technology and the creation of an incredible wealth of things that we can do that don't require human muscle power. We've shifted away from a manufacturing, building, farming economy to a service economy. We are a technological economy. Manual physical labor, the hands and feet that load the wheelbarrow or put the transmissions in the cars or build the giant buildings or dig the ditches that alongside the road have been replaced by technological marvels, robot workers and assembly lines, huge machines that do a better job than any 300 people. We would have no problem building the pyramids in 6 months. And it took the Egyptians untold years and millions of slaves to erect them. So we can no longer expect our kids to be able to go out and get a manual labor job and rise through the company to be its head, because those manual labor jobs that don't require a college degree or even a high school diploma just are not there anymore. What manual labor we need is now farmed out to places like Bangladesh, India, the Philippines, Southeast Asia, and China, of course. Mexico. Many places where there are lots and lots of people who need things built and no technology to build it for them. Our labor unions, which began as a real necessity to stop the rapacious treatment of the ordinary worker by the incredibly wealthy industrialists who saw them as little more than hands and feet to be thrown aside when something broke, to huge monsters that devour the paychecks of their members and use it to influence more and more left policies in our Congress that inevitably rebound on the workers because they no longer have the dignity of being treated as individual people, merely a voting bloc bought and paid for by their very wealthy union bosses. We've taken a country that was built on the pioneer idea that you help your neighbor because someday you might need his help yourself, to you screw over your neighbor because if you don't get him first, he's going to get you. We think like those Soviet children in school. The only way to rise is cheat. The only way to win is cheat. The only way to be successful is to cheat. the only way to matter is to cheat. Because it's only the clever cheater who will get the power. We have a clever cheater in our White House. Yes, he is a clever cheater. He is the kind of person for whom the system has been bent and twisted and greased to put him in a position for which he is not qualified. To give him a meteoric rise from community organizer to president with little or no experience in the real world of earning a living in a real job and working for your education with real effort. Is it any wonder that we have lovely creations like Race to the Top and No Child Left Behind, which tie federal funding into specific goals and treatment of students, like making sure that all schools keep a tally now of exactly what ethnicity every student subject to discipline who receives disciplinary measures is, so that we can determine whether or not minority students in public schools are being unfairly subject to disciplinary action. Unfairly meaning more of them in ISS than wasps. Okay? And I don't mean the little bugs who build the paper nests. And that, of course, if they can discover that that's the case, is just one more racism card to play to show that our whole country is doing everything it can to deny opportunity to those who need it most, when the very opposite is true. Equal outcomes, ladies and gentlemen, redistribution of wealth, equal stuff in everybody's house, per Reverend Al Sharpton. Well, I don't have equal stuff in my house to what I'm sure is in his house. I don't have equal stuff in my house to what every member of Congress in the House and Senate has in theirs, because I cannot afford those things. What I have in my house, I've worked for and I've paid for, and my husband worked for and paid for. And what I have in my house is sufficient for my needs. And I have many necessary luxuries. So I am a very fortunate woman. But even if I were to be compared to, say, the White House or a senator and deemed to be unfortunately very poor, I would not immediately demand that the president or the senator hand over to me a large proportion of what they have simply because they have more than I do. I have never been able to understand how progressives assume that you can legislate people's hearts. Charity by thug never works. It's just another take on the good old protection racket. If you don't give us your money, we can't use it to help all those poor, unfortunate people. And if you don't want us to have your money and do that, you are an evil, grasping, greedy person who hates people who are different from you or who have less than you, because you want to have more than everybody else. And the number of people who actually believe that astounds me. Given the last presidential election, apparently 51% of the population that voted in it believe that crap. And where were they taught it? They didn't learn it in the last 4.5 years, ladies and gentlemen, from the White House. They learned it over the last 30 years in our public schools, where virtue began to be taught as obedience to the state rather than obedience to God and ethical values, where success was defined as being popular and having lots of self-esteem instead of being hardworking and able to show results for your effort. As I said, the cheating scandal in Atlanta is only the tip of the iceberg. But unless we wish to follow the Titanic's fatal journey, we need to start looking a lot more closely through the fog of progressive honeyed words and promises to see the vast navy of icebergs that will, if we do not avoid them or destroy them, sink us more deeply than the Titanic ever fell. I have worked in education for a very long time, in public schools, in private tutoring, even in many jobs that I worked at that were outside of formal education. My function was often to give information to people, to help them understand something that they needed to do. Human resources, being a front of the house hostess in a restaurant, being head of a reservations department at a racetrack, working in the hotel industry, private tutoring for over 20 years. I have always been a teacher, no matter what job I held at any given time. It seems to be my role in life, my purpose. Fortunately, it's also my passion and my delight. Never in my life have I had the influence brought to bear on me to cheat. Even when I was 4 years old and playing war with my mother, my mom used to, let us win, and it horrified my father. But if the reason she did it wasn't to undermine our morality, she just couldn't stand an interminable 3.5 hour game of cards when she had a little baby and a 4-year-old to take care of, as well as an ailing mother. But I was taught that to cheat was a horrible thing, because not only did you damage someone else by undermining their ability to shine, you also damaged yourself, because no one could ever trust you again. I grew up understanding that my integrity, my word, was of inestimable value. Because upon my integrity and my word would rest my credibility with everyone I met. If I developed the reputation of a liar or a cheater, I would never be able to trust anyone, because no one would ever be able to trust me. When my husband was working in the jewelry business, He used to travel to New York City quite frequently, both in his capacity as head of the jewelry repair shop and later when he was making jewelry on his own. And one thing that impressed him terribly was the diamond merchants in the Jewish ghetto in New York, the Hasidic Jews, who dealt in diamonds. Millions and millions of dollars exchanged hands on a man's sworn word and a handshake. Because if you did not deal fairly, you would lose not only the respect of your peers, you would lose their business. You would never, ever be able to engage in business in that trade again because your reputation was ruined. And that impressed him terribly. And it was one of the things that made him what he was, because he believed in that principle. He believed that his word, his given word, was his stock in trade. And that being himself exactly as he was, as honestly as he could be, was not only his duty, but his function in life. One of the reasons we had such a happy marriage was that neither of us resented the other for having a skill or talent that we lacked. And neither of us wore masks to one another. With David, I could be exactly who I was and know that I was wanted, needed, and loved. And he could be exactly him and know that he was wanted, needed, and loved by me. Those values, those ways of living, were taught to us by our parents, through our differing religious and spiritual educations, and in our schools, in private and public school for me, in public school and at Fishburne Military Academy for my husband, and by his dad, who was a hero to my husband, because never in his life did his sons ever hear him or find out that he had told a lie. If he could not answer a question, and being an intelligence, quite often he could not, he would merely say, "I cannot answer that." And that example was important to my husband to the day he died. He truly did honor his father for many things, but I think that was the thing he honored him for most, that crystal clear integrity. And my David tried to live by the code of his military school, which is the same as the code of West Point. I will not lie, cheat, or steal, nor tolerate those who do. If that were the code of honor that our children were learning, I would have a lot less problems with our public education system. But it's not. It's not. Thank you, Yo. My husband was blessed, as I am blessed even now, for having him with me as long as I did. I have never in my life, as far as I know, deliberately insulted anybody. Well, no, I take that back. Yes, I have deliberately insulted some people. I don't think I've ever inadvertently insulted anybody. There are a few that I have deliberately insulted, and I'll be judged for that, I'm sure, but in my mind, they definitely deserved it because they were eminently insultable. But I have always tried, and my husband used to laugh at me, and, well, he used to call me Pollyanna, and that wasn't a compliment coming from him, but I am, in a sense, a Pollyanna because I do try to find something in every situation about which I can be glad. Something positive that I can focus on so that I can continue to be a positive influence on those I encounter. That's part of my integrity. And I know that sometimes being a positive influence means that you have to tell the stark truth, even when it's unpalatable. My friend Rod said, imagine a congressman who could only speak the truth. Wouldn't that be amazing? It sure would. I would love to see the movie Liar, Liar, one of the few things I enjoyed Jim Carrey in, translated to Congress. And I don't think we will ever, ever live that long, as my friend Joe asks. Mainly because politics, not statesmanship, but politics, means telling a falsehood so that it has shades of truth enough that the voters will believe it and keep you in power. Truth has never been the aim of political speech, ladies and gentlemen. Political speech is about influence, not truth. And political speech and influence have existed as long as man has existed. Truth comes second. Truth cannot be legislated, regulated, promoted, or created by government. Truth must come from the individual. Just as integrity and justice and charity and kindness and compassion must come from the individual. If enough individuals nurture and grow those capabilities and put them to work in the world outside their family, we will have government that may perhaps be more truthful, have more integrity, have more compassion, be better at justice, but we will never have a government that can create those things in the hearts and minds of its citizens. Because government doesn't create souls, ladies and gentlemen. Government does not create people. Government does not play a part in who you are and how you grow and what your morals and manners are unless you give up your individuality and hand over your liberty, which includes the liberty to fail, to a false sense of security and safety and equal outcomes. Then, and only then, will government shape you, because you will not notice anything outside of that shaping. You will have given up your soul, your individuality, for the illusion of a risk-free life, in which everybody is equal, because everybody is alike. I refuse to do that. I refuse to promote it with my children, either my own children, my husband's daughters and their kids, my grandchildren, my grandnieces and nephews. I will not do that, and I will not do that with the children I teach. I will not lie to them. I will not tell them that an answer is correct when it isn't. I will help them understand why it is not correct, and give them another problem or question so they can see how to find the correct answer. But I will not pander and scrape and bow and grovel before an inflated state that believes it is God. It's likely that the days when the Department of Education and happy little rules and regulations and all the money that the states receive that are tied to those things will dry up, because we are rapidly bankrupting ourselves as a nation, both morally and economically. If that happens and I'm still alive, I will do my best to try to keep the flame of individuality and knowledge alive as best I can. I still have actual books, you know, the kind with covers and pages, as well as my Kindle and my computer. And I have many of them in my mind and in my heart. Not memorized, but enough so that I can tell the stories. And I've learned how to do things, and I've learned how to reason, and I've learned how to speak, and I've learned how to get across to someone else the things that I know. My value will be not in my physical being or my self-opinion or how many things I have in my house or any of those things. My value will be what I have learned that I can share with others. That will be my value in that falling apart world. I hope and pray that I will not outlive my country. I do not want to outlive my country. But if I should, I will do everything in my power as a little old lady to pass on what I have learned, both in experience and in academic knowledge. And if we have to start all over again with the oral tradition, then that's what we'll do. And I certainly won't cheat at it either, nor will I encourage anyone else to do so. The climate that creates a scandal like the one in the Atlanta public schools is pervading this country. And it stems from the large urban areas. The folks in the country generally aren't really good at cheating, because you really can't cheat a corn plant into producing ears of corn. And you can't really cheat on fertilizer and plowing and tilling and weeding and expect to get a harvest out of your soybean field. And no matter how much you tell your pansies that they look beautiful to raise their self-esteem, if you plant them before the last frost comes, your pansies are not going to make it. Until we realize that our current public education system is doing exactly the opposite of educating our people, we are going to be traveling along that iceberg-strewn route that sank the Titanic. We do have the technology to fix this, ladies and gentlemen. And we have the desire, and we have the people out there who would be willing to take less money in order to know that our kids were actually being educated. There are people who believe in what they do, but who cannot stand up and speak out, because if they do, They will be called every name from racist to crazy right-wing fanatic to potential homeland security threat. And they, too, have to feed their families and put gas in the car so they can get to work and get the money to feed those same families. And many of them might even give up that money if they felt that what they had to do and what they had to say and how they could teach was important enough to basically beg in the street in order to teach people. To be Socrates or Plato and have their students pay them for their wisdom rather than government. Oh, yes. Government-run schools, the state paying to educate your kids, is a progressive idea. And it was when government began to do that, as far back as the 1930s, that we began to see the decline in real education and real respect for knowledge. Because your school no longer was the prerogative, no longer was the property, no longer was the center of your community's children's knowledge base. No, it wasn't the school and it wasn't the teacher. It was Washington. It was progressivism, whose basic tenets are that given enough regulation and enough power, we can redesign humanity. And the human machine, the group, the world population will smoothly mesh with all gears functioning correctly, all bolts and nuts firmly tightened, and hum along, enriching those who guide it in their own estimation of their own godhood. Progressivism is no different from any other dictatorship, ladies and gentlemen. It just wears prettier clothes. Its goals are identical to the Saddam Husseins, the Ho Chi Minhs, the Mao Zedongs, the Genghis Khans, the Idi Amins, the Napoleons, the Hitlers, the Osama bin Ladens. Its goals are the same as any dictator in the history of human beings. Power and control. Keep the population ignorant and afraid, and they will do as they are told, for they have no longer the spine nor the will to resist. Convince them that they are too foolish and too childish to make decisions that will benefit them, and that you must decide for them to keep them safe and equal to one another. Inevitably, progressivism will fail again, as it has in the past, as all dictatorships have failed in the past. And we'll start over again with another great experiment. And that great experiment may succeed for even longer than ours has so far. We may get lucky and let this great experiment in which we live survive and thrive and become even greater if we, the people, put forth the effort to make it happen. My friend Rod mentioned the old saying, give a hungry man a fish to eat and you have to keep doing it. But give him a fishing pole, teach him how to fish, and he can take care of himself. There are many parables, a nod to my brother-in-law, says I always talk in them. And they are parables, and they are old sayings, and they are aphorisms, and they are cliches, because they are true. That's how cliches become cliches. Because they become so part of our way of expressing our understanding of the world. They're such basic truths that they live on forever. But we forget sometimes, and we keep trying to reinvent the wheel. We keep trying to make assumptions about humanity that are wrong. We keep trying to evolve to godhood. We keep making those wings and sticking them on with wax and flying too close to the sun. And so long as there are people, that will happen over and over again. But that's no reason to sit back and say, oh, well, I can't help it. I can't do anything about it. I'm just going to sit here and take care of me, and I'll cheat and I'll manipulate till I can get up there on the lower levels of power, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore. Nope. You will have to worry about it, because the guy underneath you is going to be cheating like crazy to pull down your little house of power and climb over top of you to get to the next one. If you don't resist the lethargy and the apathy and the I can't do anything about it, the sooner you will be consumed by the progressive machine. It may not look as if you can change the world all by yourself. You probably can't. As far as I know, there's only been one person who did that, and he was divine, and I'm certainly not. But I can and will change what I see in front of me that isn't right, and I will change what I see about me that isn't right if I possibly can. And above all, I will try to live up to the ethics and the morality I was taught. That to be honest, to have integrity, to be kind, to exercise compassion, and to do unto others as I would be done by, were rules to live by. That honor and honesty and a reputation based on those things were as valuable as the shiniest diamond or the brightest gold. And that no one could take them away from you without your consent. I tell my students that the only things they get to keep as long as they live are what they put in their minds and what they keep in their hearts. All the physical things, the Game Boys and the $300 sneakers and the sexy new car and the pretty clothes and the fancy fingernails and all of those things, they go away. Somebody can take them away from you. Heck, an electromagnetic pulse or a major pole shift could take it away from all of us. But not what we have in our minds and not what we have in our hearts. And if we have our minds and our hearts filled with good things, we can rebuild after any disaster, whether it be political, natural, economic, social, or emotional. Because that is what the human spirit is made of. We too are creators. For those of you who believe that we are created in the image of God, then it should be logically obvious that we must be creators too. We build, we make, we think, we create. We make new things. We find ways to use things in new and better ways. Have a caller. Let me see who's online. Hello there.
Hi, Terry. It's the bird from California.
Hello, my bird of paradise. Thought I recognize your area code. How's life treating you today?
Oh, it's doing well. I'm going to go in a few minutes to do my catering job, and we have gorgeous spring weather, and it's great. You touched on so many wonderful things today, and when you talk about the honesty and integrity of a person, and your beloved David, an honest man, and that's to be commended, of course, and God bless him for being where he is now, so, and, you know, how we feel. We love you, and we love him as well, so.
Thank you.
But there was a teacher, and, you know, as you know, because you're in this business, that so many of them that are the good teachers, the ones who had integrity and the people who, you know, used their minds creatively, they stick with you forever. I think I was seventh grade, and I think her name was Mrs. Hodison, and I'll never forget her because not only was she funny, she was honest, down to earth, and she taught us well. And if a child asked a question of her and she really did not know the answer, instead of making up a story, God bless her, she says, you know what, I don't know, but tomorrow I'll have it for you. Mm-hmm. And she did. And this is the mark, I believe, of a wonderful teacher, a sensei, okay. as you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do this.
Of course, we can't know everything.
Of course not, in spite of the fact that my grandsons think I do.
But, you know, when you speak on the progressivism and the dictators, what the Glenn Beck program was very, talking about education for the whole hour, it was amazing. I don't know if you caught it.
No,
my homeboy, Mike Slater, from here in San Diego, had volunteered, of course, with Glenn's request to fill in today. Mm-hmm. And so he flew to Dallas and did all those things. And he had some amazing people on there, educators, people for free markets, people like Yaron Brooks and others. And they were talking about the free market solutions to education, because they even went back to the early 1800s thinking, you know, when they started these programs of government-run education, they were doing the cog in the wheel thing and trying to do that progressive thing even back then.
Yep.
To make everybody, you know, and it's not working out well.
Nope.
And then we have our own DOJ, you know, not giving sanction to these people from Germany who would, if they go back to there, because they've made those laws under Hitler's rule, or prior to Hitler, that, you know, homeschooling is outlawed and all these things. And so they were having their kids purportedly would be taken away from them. So they wanted political asylum here. Of course, the DOJ is a complete idiot, because he believes that the children belong to the state, like every other dictator in history, and I've had it.
Yep, yep.
And the problem is, if parents had a real alternative to what's going on today, there would be an exodus like Pharaoh's Egypt to these privatization of choice.
Yes, ma'am.
Commercial. In other words, you are a consumer of a product, and if somebody doesn't do it well, you're not going to go there. You'll go out of business.
And you will find a different manufacturer of that product who does produce the quality that you need.
Right.
With whose product you are satisfied, and that producer will become successful. It works every time. But the progressive ideal can't allow free markets, because free markets don't make everybody alike, Linda.
Oh, I know.
Anathema. You cannot have individuals in the progressive mindset unless they are.
It takes away their power.
Exactly. You can only have groups of people whose integrity is the group, who have no persona of their own, because they think like mechanical robots. They think people should behave like machines. And it goes back to the Industrial Revolution and the Age of Enlightenment, which preceded it. The understanding with the increase in technology of everything from grinding lenses to Gutenberg, for heaven's sake, that all of a sudden we could do things that we had been taught for thousands of years only God could do. And we got incredibly inflated egos.
Right.
And ransom.
And they made this analogy on the show today, which was brilliant, because when you look at free markets, and they equated this, the cell phone idea, with education. And one of the guys said, can you imagine the size and the cost and the lack of availability of a cell phone today if the government was in charge of that market?
Oh, my God. It would make the old brick look slim and exciting. I swear to God, a government-made cell phone would be the size of my house and take 40 minutes.
Well, this is what they've done to education, Terry.
No.
They've destroyed it.
Oh, tell me about it. Start up in this for how long now? 4 years? Give or take
I know.
A year? And I watched it happen. And I've done my best being a little tiny pebble. Fortunately, you know me, and David always said I was a Pollyanna. And like I said, that was not a compliment from him, because, matter of fact, it annoyed the hell out of him a lot of the time. But I am a Pollyanna. I do. If you've ever read the book, you'll understand it isn't just, oh, gee, sweetness and light. And it isn't the Haley Mills version in the Disney movie either. It's the basic understanding that, like I have always said, it takes manure to grow roses. that out of
right.
bad, something good can always come if you look hard enough to find it. And it may be that the god-awful government we are stuck with right now.
Mm-hmm.
I look at that 51% in the last election, and I, when I can, I look at it from, okay, that means at least 49% had some sense. And
right.
all it would have taken was 1% for a draw and 2% for a victory.
Absolutely.
That,
and you know, it, yeah, it's frightening, but, you know, look, when you also mentioned that, and I believe you're absolutely correct because you are a student of history, you know what's going to happen because it will fail because progressivism is a failing situation as was Stalin's ideology and Lenin and all the other bad guys.
Right.
And hopefully out of those ashes, the people, that 49%, and hopefully we're gaining a little ground lately because people are waking up slowly, that out of those ashes, a phoenix can rise, and I am praying that with the knowledge that I have and others like us out here, you know, patriot families included,
mm-hmm.
we can go back to those principles of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and resurrect them in the way that they were meant to be in the original intent. Not
yes,
some stupid Supreme Court's ideology of what they think it means. That's
well,
where I'm coming from.
The Supreme Court has been building picket fences by measuring against a picket for so long by using precedent. If you try to build a fence that way, your fence is going to be about 2 inches long on one end and about 6 feet on the other. And that's basically what they've done with citing precedent instead of constitutional correctness. And,
right.
You know, that analogy came from a friend of mine, and I really like it. But that's what we've got now. We've got supposed to be a picket fence that was the same height all the way across. Now we've
mm-hmm.
got something that slopes down to about the size of a toothpick because they keep measuring against the previous thing that they said. And then they turn around and measure against the previous thing that they said that was exactly the opposite of the other previous thing they said. It's absurd.
Yeah,
idiotic.
It is. And one of the guys on the show today said that we must start looking at education the same way we look at our freedom of religion. In other words, those who believe in the separation of church and state, thereby not creating a theocracy, we must separate state from education. And
yeah.
I applaud that idea wholeheartedly. And I hope it happens. I think,
oh,
you
God.
Know, I would love, can you imagine the innovation and the creativity and the wonderfulness if we had
mm-hmm.
little tiny schools and people volunteering or, you know,
mm-hmm.
making it a free market situation whereby the free market will take care of itself, the people
mm-hmm.
will flock to these places, the teachers could
mm-hmm.
be retired this or that, one
mm-hmm.
could volunteer to teach dance and they would get a scholarship points to Juilliard for their service.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's with our innovation as Americans, there's ways to fix these things.
Of course there is. If you remember, I don't know whether you saw the program they did on Fox on Carpe Diem School, which was...
I missed that one, but I know you talked about it. It was fantastic. And I'm not a fan of Williams, but yeah.
Nor am I, but at least he narrated reasonably well.
Yeah.
But that is using technology in a logical and beneficial way. The oxymoronic assumption that the educational pundits in the Federal Department of Education come up with, that you can individualize education to each and tailor it to each child's weaknesses and strengths and still meet a chronological objective standard, is crap. Pardon me, but that's what it is. It's crap.
Mm-hmm.
But Carpe Diem and that type of school comes closer to achieving that than the traditional
sure.
model. You can't get it in the traditional classroom model. It is impossible. I've worked in traditional classrooms.
What makes you one crazy is when you look at the layers of bureaucracy and you look at the levels. You've got the state, every state has their own mandates. They've got people spending fortunes, you know, with bond measures and property taxes funding this nonsense. Mm-hmm. And then you've got these federal, you know, Lilliputians running around mandating Common Core. It's crazy.
And
people put up with it.
Well, the pathetic part is there are so many people out there, Linda, who do not really recognize how much their individuality is of value because they
right.
don't see that you're never going to be able to have the kind of equality that that idiot Sharpton keeps yapping about.
Right.
Because you can't get that unless everybody is identical. And God
right.
knows I don't want to give up my individuality. I love
no.
you, but I don't want to be you. Okay?
and you don't want to be me. This is what Glenn was hammering home a few days ago when he said, maximum freedom demands maximum responsibility.
It does.
You can't escape that. You can't.
No,
that's like
can't.
A law of physics. I mean,
it's pretty much axiomatic in whatever universe you happen to be inhabiting. I don't know of any others, and I've never lived in them as far as I know.
And I don't want
axiomatic.
To.
Well, I don't know. You know, they might be more fun. Being flat might be entertaining for a while. You never know. You know, if we had different dimensions and all that other stuff. I don't know. You know, being three-dimensional isn't bad. Being six-dimensional might be interesting. But then again, maybe
then
that's what happens next.
I know, and then you touched on the ideology of so many people who do not believe that they have the capabilities or mm-hmm. the impetus or whatever or the smarts or the individuality to try to make a change. Maybe we can't make a change, but you have to try.
Exactly.
I mean, when you see something that's unjust or wrong, it's always
exactly.
wrong, and you've got to stand up. And that's why do you think I go to these meetings? I'm getting better at it. I actually got applause on my first sentence, which was kind of neat. I wasn't expecting
it. Good girl.
It. But I'm getting better at public speaking because Terry, I'm compelled to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I can't sit
needs
up and sit
must.
Up.
Needs must when necessity drives, honey.
I know.
When a person is needed, the cream always rises to the top, sugar. I'm sorry. Even the best homogenized milk, eventually the cream's going to rise. And
yeah.
I really never was interested in being homogenized milk or cottage cheese myself. I prefer being.
I got plenty of that in my thighs. Darn it.
Yeah, I know about that too, sweetie.
I'm going to thank you because I got to do my catering job, but you have done an incredible job. I mean, everything you touched on was right on, point. And I'm going to go take care of some stuff and God bless you guys, and I'll see you in the next show.
We'll be around, and thank you so much for calling in, Linda. It's always
Oh, you're welcome.
And I'm so
God
glad
bless
you
him.
Enjoyed the show.
Yes.
God
thank
bless
you. Oh, yes. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've heard from my good, dear friend, Linda, my California bird of paradise, and she is a warrior in the cause of light, if ever there was one. And I did mean exactly what I said, that when necessity drives, needs must. When we are in trouble, leaders arise. Linda is one of those leaders. Because she knows she has to be. Because she sees something that is wrong and she believes enough in her own sense of integrity and her own moral compass to stand up in front of God and everybody and say, wait a minute, this is wrong. One of the reasons why she's one of my heroes and always will be. I hope that all of you who've joined us tonight in the chat room and listening out there in Blog Talk Land have had an interesting evening. And I hope that all of you will take with you some of my Pollyanna attitude, that we can use this manure we're mired in to grow roses if we're willing to get a little dirty and to shovel up the muck so that there's only enough to fertilize new growth and a better tomorrow. I'm hoping you'll join us every night of the week for one of our radio shows here on Blog Talk Radio from Patriot Families. On Sundays, Frank is Fed Up. On Mondays, Constitution Hour. On Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesdays, Right from the Left Coast. On Thursdays, Patriot Education, where you suffer through my rants and raves. On Fridays, Foreclosure Help. On Saturdays, Breaking the Illusion. We have great folks in our Patriot family, ladies and gentlemen, and we would love to have you join us and be a part of this American family, this quintessentially American family that believes in the values our founders based our countries on. Those values of self-reliance, integrity, honesty, and the courage to do what is right instead of what is easy. I hope you'll join me here next week at 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio for Patriot Education. We'll be exploring many topics together, I'm sure. But at the root of it all is the understanding that we need to change the climate so that we don't have to explore another teaching scandal, another attempt to make equal outcomes that cannot exist, another weed in our garden of public and private education, where the most precious plants of all, our children, are hopefully going to be taught how to become good men and women who do have integrity and self-reliance and who do understand the golden rule and who believe in freedom with responsibility and compassion from the heart and not only the pocket. I'd like to thank all my friends in the chat room and all of you out there for joining us tonight. And I want to thank my Patriot family again for their kindness and compassion towards me in my time of loss. As always, it's hard to do this show without my biggest fan, ladies and gentlemen. But I know that if I didn't, he'd be disappointed in me. And since that has never been the case, I don't want to set a new precedent and start that now. For those of you who knew my David, remember him. For those of you who didn't, know that he was a fine man and that his example and his life are ones that I was privileged to share, a gift for which I will be eternally thankful. I know it's a little early to stop tonight, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm going to call it quits. And hopefully we'll see each other and hear each other next Thursday at 6. Meanwhile, go out there and find out what your kids are learning. Listen to what they tell you when they come home from school. Read their textbooks. Look at their test papers. Look at their notes. Find out what they're being taught. And go to those PTA meetings and school board meetings. And pay attention to the curriculum. Pay attention to the edicts that come from the Federal Department of Education. Read. Educate yourselves. Look it up. Be a lifelong learner, because that is what this country was built on. You can and will change things. I know it. I believe in you because you are the nation. Good night, everyone. See you next week. Take care and God bless.